welcome to Forensic Files Friday. I am your host, Russ, and with me is the co-host of Six Tour Patio, Lucky Me, and this is the Fritzer case tonight.
Hello, everybody.
Hope you're doing all right today.
I am. How are you?
I'm doing good. Doing good.
Good.
There's a lot to this dude.
Yes, there is.
Hey, Robert. How you doing? Hey, Eric. How you doing? Good to see y'all in.
Hello.
There is a lot to this guy. Hey, Angie. How you doing?
Yeah, he was quite the... I don't even know. It's just a monster.
Hey, Shelby. How you doing? Hey, Robert.
Wait, you guys are doing the Forensic Fridays.
Yes, we are.
Okay, well then I will bounce down.
All right, buddy.
Good hearing you, though.
Good to hear you too, Lucky.
Bar on the line from It's Showtime at the Apollo, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight's Forensic Friday episode with Russ and Lucky Me and Shelby and the Outside of Normal Laguna Knot gang is dedicated in memory to Woody Bush, a Podbean legend who we wish him a happy heavenly birthday this weekend.
Thank you, Eric. That's awesome.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Eric.
Everybody's driving.
I'm walking.
I'm sitting.
Yeah, I'm sitting.
Hey, sister, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm just.
Well, we're glad you're here.
I'm glad to be here.
Just take it one thing at a time.
Do I have a... This is one of those times I'm very glad I do not own a gun.
I see.
Did I say that out loud?
Well, it is the Forensic Friday show, so hey.
Yeah.
You've come to the right place.
Cease and say it just cut off all at once.
No, it just started over. But it is Forensic Files Friday, and like I said, this is the Fritzel case. Thank you for joining us, and it is a lot to unpack, so I'm gonna kill the music and get started with this guy. This guy is known as the Monster of Amsterdam, maybe? Not Amsterdam, I don't know how to say that word. Amstetten from Lower Austria. How do you say that? Amstetten?
Yeah, I'd say Amstetten. That sounds about right. Yeah. Lower Austria.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Austria. Yeah,
there, this dude's had a lot going on outside of just kidnapping his daughter for 24 years. So,
yeah, I think that's what he's mostly known for, but he was a bad, bad man.
Yeah. That's a song, you know?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'll shut up now. I'm so sorry.
What's crazy is after you hear everything that he's done and everything that's going on with this guy, that his sentence was life imprisonment with a possibility of parole after 15 years. Because it was Austria, and that nobody else in the world has our kind of laws, I don't think. I don't understand. But
I know, because that one we did with the diamond heist, It was just like 10 years.
10 years, yeah, and out the door, yeah.
Yeah. And maybe their prison system is a harsher punishment.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know.
Guys, I'm going to mute for a minute. I'll be back.
Okay.
Yeah. Take your time, Shelby. Take your time. But without any further ado there, I'm going to... Where do you want to start? Like, I'll let you start this off.
I'm going to start this one?
Yeah, you did good with the diamond heist. So
I'm
going to fill in for you in between the things that you know. So.
Okay. All right. Well,
to be honest.
Okay. Let's see. Well, the man himself, his name is Joseph Fritzl, and that's Joseph with the J-O-S-E-F. Fritzl is F-R-I-T-Z-L. In case you're interested, there are like Netflix and Datelines and all that stuff you could watch on the story. He also went by Joseph Mayeroff. He was born April 9th, 1935, so he is 89 years old right now. He is incarcerated at Gartston Abbey. He was married to a woman in, or her name was Marie Fritzl. They were married in 1956. He ended up having a total of 15 children. We'll get into more details about those children. And he was convicted of murder by negligence, rape, and some other charges. And his penalty was the life imprisonment with the possibility of parole in just a short little thing of 15 years. So he ended up pleading guilty, so it didn't go to trial. It's just there was only one death, so the convictions specifically were murder by negligence, enslavement, rape, deprivation of liberty, coercion, and incest. That was what he was actually found guilty of. So the case itself emerged to the public in 2008 when a woman named Elizabeth Fritzl, she was born on April 6th. His birthday was April 9th, but she was born in 1966. And she told the police in the city of Amstetten in Lower Austria that she had been held captive by her father for 24 years. So that's how it came to light and came to the public eye. So some, let's see, some background. He was born, this Joseph Fritzl, now known as Mayeroff. He was born, I told you, in 1935, and he was born to Joseph Fritzl Sr. and Maria Fritzl. And he grew up as an only child, which I found kind of interesting for the 30s, because I thought typically they're, but again, it's a foreign country, so I guess it's not like America, but there just seemed like that was odd to hear. Family only had the one child. And he grew up only being raised by his working mother. His father, who was a severe alcoholic, had deserted the family when Fritzl was four, and he never came into contact with him. So Fritzl Sr. later fought as a soldier during World War II and was killed in action in 1944. So Fritzl, Joseph Fritzl Jr., the guy we're going to be talking about, we'll just call him Fritzl. He married a 17-year-old named Rosemarie. She was born in September 1939, and he ended up having three sons and four daughters with her. One of the daughters is Elizabeth. He reportedly began sexually abusing Elizabeth in 1977 when she was only 11 years old. So he did go to college, and he completed his education with a qualification in electrical engineering, and he obtained a job which he held from 1969 to 1971. He held a job with a construction material firm. Later, he became a technical equipment salesman traveling through Austria. He retired from active employment when he turned 60 in 1995. But he continued some commercial activities in addition to his apartment building in Amstetten. Fritzl rented out several other properties, so he was a landlord. In 1972, he purchased a guest house and an adjacent campsite at Lake Mondesi, and he ran it together with his wife until 1996. That takes us straight into, so that was his background. So we're just going to kind of get into, what this guy did. So in 1967, Fritzl broke into the Lentz home of a 24-year-old nurse while her husband was away, and he raped her while holding a knife to her throat, threatening to kill her if she screamed. According to a report and a press release, he was also named as a suspect in a case of attempted rape of a 21-year-old woman, and was also known for indecent exposure. He was arrested, and he served 12 months of an 18-month prison sentence. So he only got 18 months for rape and indecent exposure. In accordance with Austrian law, his criminal record was expunged after 15 years. So as a result, more than 25 years later, when he applied to adopt and or foster some of Elizabeth's children, the local service authorities did not discover his criminal history. So in November 12th, 1986. I'm sorry.
I was saying that's wild that 15 years if you know your criminal record gets expunged.
Yeah. Over there. So yeah. Rape and incest totally just disappears off your record.
Yeah. That's just crazy.
Crazy. So on November 12th in 1986, early in the morning, 17-year-old Martina Posch left her home and went to the nearby bus stop. But she didn't show up for her agreed meeting with her boyfriend around 5 p.m. He called Martina's mother, who thought her daughter was already with the boyfriend. So later she learned that Martina had not shown up for work that day, and the authorities were also able to determine through witness statements that Posh had been on the bus, had not been on the bus earlier that morning either. On November 22nd, so 10 days later, two scuba divers found Posh's body wrapped in two olive green tarps and on the southern shore of Lake Mondesi. The forensic examination revealed that she had been likely strangled, killed by strangulation, 2 hours after leaving her parents' home. So after his arrest, Fritzl was investigated for possible involvement, since at the time of the murder, he and his wife ran the guest house, which is located opposite of where Posh was found. And she was also very physically similar to his daughter, Elizabeth. So in addition to Posh's homicide, Fritzl was also looked into as a suspect in the death of a 17-year-old girl named Anna Neumayer. And she was killed with a captive bolt pistol in a field in Linz on August 17th, 1966. She had disappeared on her way to Wells, which was 35 kilometers from where Fritzl worked at the time. Another potential victim was Gabriella Subkova. She was 42 and was a prostitute. She was murdered in August of 2007. Her body was found at a reservoir near the Austrian-Czech border at the time when Fritzl was on holiday there. However, Fritzl was ultimately not charged with any of these murders due to lack of evidence.
Hey, Sue, how you doing?
Hey, Sue.
Hi, Ross. Hi, everyone.
Hello. So, after his arrest, Fritzl claimed that his behavior toward his daughter did not constitute rape because it was consensual. Now remember, he started this when she was 11. In extracts from talking with his lawyer, Fritzl had said that he, quote, always knew during the whole 24 years that what he was doing was not right, that I must have been crazy to do such a thing, yet it became a normal occurrence to lead a second life in the basement of my house. And that's his quote regarding his treatment of the family that he had with his, of one of the family members he had with his wife. I'm not the beast the media makes me out to be. regarding his treatment of Elizabeth and her children in the cellar. He explained that he brought flowers for Elizabeth and books and toys for the children into what is called a bunker, often watching videos with the children. He ate meals with Elizabeth and the children. Fritzl decided to imprison Elizabeth after she did not adhere to any rules anymore when she became a teenager. Basically, probably, I would say she's probably didn't want to have sex with him anymore. And so he coerced her back down to the basement, but that's my opinion. And then he said that's why he had to do something. He had to create a place where he could keep Elizabeth by force, if necessary, away from the outside world. He suggested that the emphasis on discipline in the Nazi era, during which he grew up until the age of 10, might have influenced his views about decency and good behavior. So critics said that some of his statements may have been a ploy to prepare for an insanity defense. So reflecting on his childhood, Fritzl initially described his mother as the best woman in the world and as strict as it was necessary. Later, he expressed a negative opinion of his mother and claimed that she used to beat him, hit him until he was lying in a pool of blood on the floor. It left him feeling totally humiliated and weak. His mother was a servant and she used to work hard all her life, and he never got a kiss from her. He was never cuddled, although he wanted to. He wanted her to be good to him. He also claimed that she called him a Satan, a criminal, and a no good, and that he had a horrible fear of her. In 1959, after Fritzl had married and bought his house, his mother moved in with them. Over time, their roles reversed, and his mother came to fear him. Eventually, he also admitted that he had later locked his mother in the attic and bricked up her window after telling neighbors that she had died, and kept her locked up until her death in 1980. So, I guess after, in 1959, after he married his wife, yeah. So she was up there from 1959 to 1980. It is unknown how long Fritzl kept his mother locked in the attic, but newspapers have speculated that it may have been up to 20 years.
Yeah, it's insane that he could just keep people locked away in his house and nobody ever knows.
I know. It's like, okay, I'm tired of your attitude. I'm going to lock you up and nobody's going to know anything about it. And his wife and the other kids were in that house. How did they not know that she was up in the attic?
Yeah, I don't. They just didn't want to know, I guess, is what that was.
I guess. I guess you're right. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, that's wild. All right.
So, Fritzl's mother was described as unpredictable and abusive. Fritzl referred to himself as an alibi child, meaning that his mother only gave birth to him to prove that she was not barren and could produce children. So he just started out bad. during his prison stint for the earlier rape conviction, he admits that he planned to lock his daughter up so that he could contain and express his evil side. He said he was born to rape, and I held myself back for a relatively long time. I could have behaved a lot worse than locking up my daughter. The forensic psychiatrist diagnosed Fritzl as having a severe combined personality disorder, which included borderline schizotypal.
Yeah, that's right.
And schizoid types, and a sexual disorder, and recommended that Fritzl receive psychiatric care for the rest of his life. Later reports have revealed that Fritzl's premeditated plan to lock up his daughter was not for discipline, but for his own gratification. Do you want to do the investigation?
Yeah. But that's crazy that they had to do reports to say that it was for his own gratification and not for discipline. Like,
right.
How would you ever look at that as if it was for discipline? I don't
know. Right. 24 years. Yeah.
Pursuant to the agreement that she would never have to see her father again, Elizabeth Fritzl gave videotaped testimony before Austrian prosecutors and investigators on July 11, 2008. And on November 13, 2008, authorities in Austria released an indictment against Joseph Fritzl. He stood trial for the murder of the infant Michael, who died shortly after birth, and faced between 10 years and life imprisonment. He was also charged with rape, incest, kidnapping, false imprisonment, and slavery, which carry a maximum 20-year term. That's insane.
You would think 20 years each. I just can't get over that all of that was just 20 years.
Right. And even for the murder, it was a 10-year, 10 years to life imprisonment. But it's still, you could only get 10 years for that if they wanted to.
Yeah. Yeah. And, yeah. So you want to do the captivity? I didn't realize that section was so
short. After completing the compulsory education at age 15, Elizabeth started a course to become a waitress. I didn't know you could take courses to become a waitress. I guess
right, I didn't
either. Back then you could.
Maybe just basics of food service or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. That's wild to me. But in January 1983, she ran away from home and went into hiding in Vienna with a friend from work. She was found by police within 3 weeks and returned to her parents in Amstetten. She rejoined her waitress's course, finished it in mid-1984, and was offered a job in nearby Linz. On August 28th of 1984, after Elizabeth turned 18, Fritzl lured her into the basement of her family home, saying that he needed help carrying a door. In reality, Fritzl had been converting the basement into a makeshift prison chamber, and the door was the last thing he needed to seal it. After Elizabeth held the door in place while Fritzl fitted it into the frame, he held an ether soaked towel on her face until she was unconscious, and then he threw her into the chamber. After Elizabeth's disappearance, Rose Marie filed a missing persons report, and almost a month later, Fritzl handed over a letter to the police. The first of several there that would he had forced Elizabeth to write while she was in captivity. The letter postmarked Branu, I guess is how you'd say that. Stated that she was tired of living with her family and was staying with a friend. She warned her parents not to look for her, or she would leave the country. Fritzl told police that she had most likely joined a cult. And I guess back in the 80s, that was believable, that people just run off and join a cult. So the police really didn't look into any of that. So over the next 24 years, Fritzl was able to hide her in a hidden chamber and went there almost every day. And he's minimum of 3 times a week, bringing food and other supplies, and repeatedly raping her. She gave birth to 7 children during her captivity. One had died shortly after birth. That was Michael. And the first three there, Lisa, Monica, and Alexander, were removed from the chamber as infants to live with Fritzl and his wife, who were approved by local social services authorities as their foster parents. Officials said that Fritzl very plausibly explained how 3 of his infant grandchildren had appeared on his doorstep. The family regularly visited, had regular visits from social workers who saw and heard nothing to arouse their suspicions. That's crazy, too. Like, just, he just showed up to social services and said, hey, I had these three kids dropped off on my doorstep, and I need to be their foster parents. And they just said, okay.
Yeah. And Rosemarie, his wife, Elizabeth's mom, was just like, okay.
Sorry.
That's
he went down the wrong pipe. But, yeah, that's just that. So she was, I don't know, was she in on this whole thing, or she did oblivious to the whole thing?
I think she was just oblivious to the whole thing. Because the story I had listened to or watched on TV, I mean, he had told Rosemarie that Elizabeth had run away and joined a cult when she was 18. Rosemarie didn't know she was in the basement.
Yeah, that's wild. But it was a guest house, so it wasn't like their main house. So I guess she never went there, and but they ran a guest house. So I don't know why she would never ever went there. And anyways, following the fourth,
and maybe after he kidnapped her, he quit renting it. Maybe
no, they I think he rented it to ground
maybe.
Floor.
I don't know.
He rented the ground floor out, and guests there would say that they heard things moving around in the basement, but he told him it was just faulty pipes.
Oh,
and
gosh, I missed that part. Okay. Jeez.
Yeah, but following the fourth child birth in 1994, Fritzl was allowed the enlargement of the prison from 35 meters to 55 meters, which is roughly 590 square foot is how much room she had.
Her and her four children.
Right. Putting Elizabeth and her children to work digging out soil with their bare hands for years. And the captives had a television, radio, and video cassette player. Food could be stored in a refrigerator and cooked or heated on hot plates. Elizabeth taught her children to read and write. And at times, Fritz would punish the family by shutting off their lights or refusing to deliver food for days at a time. Fritzl told Elizabeth and the three children who remained, Kirsten, Stefan, and Felix, that they would be gassed if they tried to escape. And investigators concluded later on that it was an empty threat, that there was no supply of gas there. And he also told them that he would electrocute them if they tried to meddle with the cell door. According to Fritzl's sister-in-law, Christine, he went into the basement every morning at 9 o'clock. Ostensibly to draw plans for machines which he sold to manufacturing firms. He often stayed for the night and did not allow his wife to bring him coffee. A tenant who rented a ground floor room in the house for 12 years claimed to hear noises from the basement, which Fritzl said that they were caused by faulty pipes or the gas heating system. So the dude stayed there for 12 years. And hey, James, how you doing? Hey, JoJo. Welcome in, Miss Angie, and everybody else. No, has joined us. But, yeah, for 12 years I got hung in there. So, you want to do the discovery of it all?
Sure. Okay. So, on April 19th of 2008, Fritzl agreed to seek medical attention after Kirsten, Elizabeth's oldest daughter, fell unconscious. Elizabeth helped him carry Kirsten out of the chamber and saw the outside world for the first time in 24 years. He forced Elizabeth to return to the chamber, where she remained for a final week. Kirsten was taken by ambulance to a local hospital and was admitted in serious condition with life-threatening kidney failure. Fritzl later arrived at the hospital claiming to have found a note written by Kirsten's mother. He discussed Kirsten's condition and the note with the doctor. Medical staff found aspects of Fritzl's story puzzling and alerted the police on the 21st of April, so 2 days after Kirsten came to the hospital. The police broadcast an appeal on the public media for the missing mother to come forward and provide information about Kirsten's medical history. The police reopened the case file on Elizabeth's disappearance. Fritzl repeated his story about Elizabeth being in a cult and presented what he claimed was a most recent letter from her dated January 2008, posted from the town of Camatin. The police contacted a church officer and experts on cults who raised doubts about the existence of this group that Fritzl had described. He noted that Elizabeth's letters seemed dictated and oddly written. Elizabeth pleaded with Fritzl to be taken to the hospital. On 26 April, he released her from the cellar along with her sons, Stefan and Felix, bringing them upstairs. He and Elizabeth went to the hospital where Kirsten was being treated on April 26th of 2008. Following a tip-off from the doctor that Fritzl and Elizabeth were at the hospital, the police detained them on the hospital grounds and took them to a police station for questioning. Elizabeth did not provide police with more details until they promised her that she would never have to see her father again. Over the next 2 hours, she told the story of her 24 years in captivity. Elizabeth recounted that Fritzl raped her and forced her to watch pornographic videos, which he made her reenact with him in front of her children in order to humiliate her. Shortly after midnight, police officers completed the investigation, and Fritzl, say age 73, was arrested on 26 April on suspicion of serious crimes against family members. On the night of April 27th, Elizabeth, her children, and her mother, Rosemarie, were all taken into care. Police and Fritzl told investigators how to enter the basement chamber through a small hidden door opened by a secret keyless entry code. Rosemarie had been unaware of what had been happening to Elizabeth. On April 29th, it was announced that DNA evidence confirmed that Fritzl was the biological father of his daughter's children. His defense lawyer said that although the DNA test proved incest, evidence was still needed for the allegations of rape and enslavement. In their 1st of May daily press conference, Austrian police said that Fritzl had forced Elizabeth to write a letter to the previous year indicating that he may have been planning to release her and the children. The letter said that she wanted to come home, but it's not possible yet. Police believe Fritzl was planning to pretend to have rescued his daughter from her fictitious cult. Police spokesman Frank Pulitzer and police plan to interview at least 100 people who have lived as tenants in the Fritzl apartment building in the previous 24 years. Do you want to go do the basement looked like?
That's so wild, yeah. Man. She had no clue. For 24 years.
24 years. I know.
That just blows my mind. Anyways. The Fritzl property in Amstetten is a building dating from around 1890, and a newer building was added after 1978 when Fritzl applied for a building permit for an extension with basement. In 1983, building inspectors visited the site, and they verified that the new extension had been built according to the dimensions specified on the permit. Fritzl had actually illegally enlarged the room by excavating space for a much larger basement concealed by walls. Around 81 or 82, according to his statement, Fritzl started to turn his hidden cellar into a prison cell and installed a wash basin, toilet, bed, hot plate, and refrigerator. And in 83, he added more space by creating a passageway to a pre-existing basement area under the old part of the property, of which he only knew. The concealed cellar had a 16-foot corridor, a storage area, and three small open cells connected by narrow passageways, and a basic cooking area and a bathroom facilities, followed by two sleeping areas, which were equipped with two beds each. It covered an area of approximately 590 square foot. The cells had two access points, a hinge door that weighed 1,100 pounds, which is thought to have become unstable over the years because of its weight, and a metal door reinforced with concrete and on steel rails that weighed about 660 pounds and measured 3.5 foot by 2 foot wide. It was located behind a shelf in Fritzl's basement workshop, protected by an electronic code entering using a remote control unit. In order to reach this door, five locking basement rooms had to be crossed. to get to the area where Elizabeth and her children were held. 8 doors in total needed to be unlocked, of course, of which 2 doors were all additionally secured by electronic locking devices. That is so crazy, man. He was able to build all this. And no one was alive. They even had building inspectors come out and check it.
That had a permit.
Had a permit and everything, So, you want to do the key events here of everything?
Sure. Yeah, let's do that. So 1977. So these are the key events, just kind of a summary of events that has happened. So 1977, Fritzl begins sexually abusing his 11-year-old daughter, Elizabeth. In 1980, Fritzl's mother, Maria, died in captivity in Fritzl's attic. From 1981 to 1982, Fritzl begins to turn the hidden cellar into a prison cell. In August of 1984, Fritzl lured 18-year-old Elizabeth into the basement and imprisoned her. In November of 1986, Elizabeth has a miscarriage in the 10th week of her pregnancy. August 30th, 1988, Kirsten is born and lives in the cellar until the age of 19 in 2008. So not only was Elizabeth raped by her own father and impregnated, she had absolutely no prenatal care and had to deliver the babies in the basement in her captive cell, if you will, the basement. So in February 1st of 1990, Stefan was born. He stays in the cellar until 2008, and he was 18 years old. In August 29th, 1992, Lisa is born. And in May of 1993, at 9 months of age, she is discovered outside the family home in a cardboard box, allegedly left there by Elizabeth with a note asking for the child to be looked after. So Fritzl actually took her out at 9 months old and said, "Oh, look, Rosemarie, there's a baby on the porch." 1993, after repeated requests by Elizabeth, Fritzl allows the enlargement of the prison, putting Elizabeth and her children to work for years digging out soil with their own hands. The prison was enlarged, and he would take out the buckets of dirt every 3 or 4 days. 26 February 1994, a fourth child was born. Her name was Monica. In December of 1994, 10-month-old Monica was found in a pushchair or a stroller outside the entrance of the house. Shortly afterwards, Rosemarie receives a phone call asking her to take care of the child. The caller sounds like Elizabeth, but it's presumed that Fritzl had used a recording of her voice. Rosemarie reported the incident to the police, expressing astonishment that Elizabeth knew their new ex-directory phone number. So she complained to the police that Elizabeth knew their phone number.
It was a private number. It wasn't in the directory.
Yeah, like a not listed phone number. Yeah.
Yeah.
28 April 1996, Elizabeth gives birth to twin boys. One dies after less than 3 days, and Fritzl removes and cremates the body. Their surviving twin, Alexander, is taken upstairs at 15 months old and discovered in circumstances similar to those of his two sisters. In December 16th, 2002, Felix is born. According to the statement by Fritzl, he kept Felix in the cellar with Elizabeth and her two eldest children because his wife could not look after another child. April 19th, 2008, Fritzl arranges for critically ill 19-year-old Kirsten to be taken to the local hospital. April 26, 2008, during the evening, Fritzl actually releases Elizabeth, Stefan, and Felix from the cellar and brings them upstairs, informing his wife that Elizabeth had decided to come home after a 24-year absence. Later that evening, after an anonymous tip-off during a visit to the hospital, Fritzl and Elizabeth are taken into police custody, where she reveals her decades-long imprisonment during questioning. March 19th, 2009, after a four-day trial in the town of St. Poulton at the age of 72, Fritzl pleads guilty to the charges of the murder by negligence of his infant son and grandson, Michael, as well as the decades of enslavement, incest, rape, coercion, and false imprisonment of his daughter, Elizabeth. And he is sentenced to life imprisonment with the possibility of parole after 15 years.
Yeah, that's so wild. And, yeah, so the trial was commenced on March 16, 2009, in the city of St. Poulton, presided over by Judge Andrea Hummer. And on the first day, Fritzl entered the courtroom attempting to hide his face from the cameras behind a blue folder, which he was entitled to do under Austrian law. After opening comments, all journalists and spectators were asked to leave the courtroom, whereupon Fritzl lowered his folder. Fritzl pled guilty to all charges with the exception of murder and grievous assault by threatening to gas his captives if they disobeyed him. In his opening remarks, Rudolf Meyer, the defending counsel, appealed to the jury to be objective and not be swayed by emotions. He insisted Fritzl was not a monster, stating that Fritzl had brought a Christmas tree down to his captives in the cellar during the holiday season. Christine Bruckhauser, prosecuting her first case since being appointed chief prosecutor, pressed for life imprisonment in an institution for the criminally insane. She demonstrated for the jurors the low height of the ceiling in the cellar dungeon, by making a mark on the door to the courtroom at 5'8.5", and described the cellar as damp and moldy, passing around a box of musty objects taken from the cellar, the odor of which made the jurors flinch. The first day of testimony, jurors watched 11 hours of testimony recorded by Elizabeth in sessions with police and psychologists, and the tape is said to have been so harrowing that the eight jurors did not watch more than 2 hours at a time. Four replacement jurors were on standby to replace any of the regular jurors in a case that could not bear to hear any more of the evidence. Besides the video testimony, Elizabeth's older brother, Harold, testified and said that he was physically abused by Fritzl as a child, and Rosemary and Elizabeth's children, Rosemary and Elizabeth's children, they refused to testify. But on the 18th of March 2009, Elizabeth Fritzl attended the second day of the criminal trial against her father in preparation for a book she wrote about the ordeal. She did not plan to see her father again, and Fritzl's attorney, Rudolf Meyer, confirmed that she had been in the visitor's gallery in disguise at the time her video testimony was aired. Joseph Fritzl recognized that Elizabeth was in court, and from this point on, you could see Joseph Fritzl going pale, and he broke down. It was a meeting of eyes that changed his mind. The next day, Fritzl began to proceedings by approaching the judge and changing his plea to guilty on all charges. He was sentenced to life imprisonment, like you said, without the possibility of parole. For 15 years, he said that he accepted his sentence and would not appeal. Fritzl is currently serving out his sentence in Garston Abbey, a former monastery in Upper Austria that had been converted into a prison. So, yeah, that's his story. Do you want to go over the aftermath of everything that happened, or?
Sure. So Judge Hummer, who presided over the trial, stated medical experts reported Elizabeth and her children were in relatively good health. After being taken into care, Elizabeth, all six of her surviving children, and her mother were housed in a local clinic where they were shielded from the outside environment and received medical attention, medical and psychological treatment. Members of the Fritzl family were offered new identities, but it was emphasized that it was their choice to make. Bertold Keplinger was the head of the clinic where Elizabeth and her children were being treated, and said that Elizabeth and the three children held captive in the cellar required further therapy to help them adjust to the light after years in semi-darkness. They also needed treatment to help them cope with all the extra space that they now had in which to move about. I could see that being a bit overwhelming. In May 2008, a handmade poster created by Elizabeth, her children, and her mother at the therapy facility was displayed in the town center. The message thanked local people for their support. We thank the whole family, would like to take the opportunity to thank all of you for sympathy at our fate. They wrote in their message, your compassion is helping us greatly to overcome these difficult times, and it shows us there are good people and honest people here who relatively care or who really care for us. We hope that soon there will be time where we can find our way back into a normal life. Kirsten was reunited with her family in June of 2008 when she was awakened from her artificially induced coma. Doctors said that she would make a full recovery. It was revealed that Elizabeth and her children were more traumatized than previously thought. Go figure. During captivity, Kirsten tore out her hair in clumps and was reported to have shredded her dress before stuffing that into the toilet. Stefan could not walk properly because of his height of 5'8", which forced him to stoop in the cellar. It had also been revealed that normal everyday occurrences such as dimming the lights or closing of doors plunged Kirsten and Stefan into anxiety and panic attacks. The other three of Elizabeth's children who were raised by their father are being treated for anger and resentment at all of the events. In July of 2008, it emerged that Elizabeth ordered her mother, Marie, out of the villa that they had been sharing in a secret location set up for them by the psychiatric clinic. Elizabeth was upset about Rosemarie's passiveness during her upbringing. Lawyer Christoph Herbst, who represents Elizabeth and her family, said, fortunately, everything is going very well. They spend their time answering hundreds of letters from all over the world. Felix, Kirsten, and Stefan, brought up underground with their mother, have all learned to swim. All of Elizabeth's children attended a 4-day summer camp organized by firefighters with 4,000 other young campers in August of 2008. The children, along with their mother, have also made day trips, including swimming outings, on which care was taken to keep them out of reach of paparazzi and to protect their privacy. In March of 2009, Elizabeth and her children were forced to move out of the family's hideaway home and returned to the psychiatric clinic, where medical staff had started trying to heal the family and unite the upstairs and downstairs siblings during the previous year. Elizabeth was reported to be distraught and close to breakdown after a British paparazzo had burst into her kitchen and started taking photographs. After the trial, Elizabeth and her 6 children were moved to an unnamed village in northern Austria, where they were living in a fortress-like house. All of the children require ongoing therapy. Factors that traumatized the upstairs children include learning that Fritzl had lied to them about their mother abandoning them, the abuse they had received from him during their childhood, and finding out that their siblings had been imprisoned in the cellar. The downstairs children received therapy due to their deprivation from normal development, the lack of fresh air and sunshine while living confined in the basement, and the abuse that they and their mother had received from Fritzl when he came to the basement. All of the children might have genetic problems common to children born of incestual relationships. Elizabeth has said to be estranged from her mother, Rosemarie, who has accepted Fritzl's story about Elizabeth joining a cult and did not pursue the matter further. But Elizabeth allows her 3 children who grew up in Joseph and Rosemarie's house to visit their grandmother regularly. Rosemarie lives alone in a small apartment. In an article in March 2010, The Independent stated that Elizabeth and her children recovered remarkably well, given the difficult lives that they've endured for so long. According to Joseph's sister-in-law, Christine, Elizabeth enjoys spending her time shopping, taking frequent showers, and driving. She has passed her driving test without difficulty. Her relationship with Thomas Wagner, I say Wagner because it's Austria, but it's on paper, it looks like Wagner, but one of her bodyguards, who is 23 years younger than Elizabeth, So looks like she's had a relationship with him. It's reported to be ongoing, with him becoming a big brother figure for the children. All of Elizabeth's children have developed normal sibling relationships with each other. And after having trouble dealing in the traumatic events, the three upstairs children slowly began recognizing Elizabeth as their mother. The children enjoy being outdoors, playing video games, and spending time with their mother and their grandmother. Despite their strained relationship, Elizabeth and her mother, Rosemarie, started visiting each other more, and Elizabeth has reportedly forgiven her mother for believing her father's story. On June 28, 2013, workers began filling the basement of the Fritzl home with concrete. Estate liquidator stated that the construction would cost about 100,000 pounds and would take a week to complete. The house was to be sold on the open market. While most neighbors approved of the proposal, some preferred that the property be demolished due to its sordid history. Asylum seekers were offered the house to live in. The house was sold for 160 pounds in December 2016, with the buyers voicing their intention to convert the building into apartments. May 2017, Joseph Fritzl changed his name to Joseph Meyerhoff, probably due to getting into a prison fight that resulted in several of his teeth getting knocked out after other inmates set up a fake dating profile with his name and picture. Mark Perry, a British journalist who interviewed Fritzl in his cell, says he has shown no remorse for his crimes. He recalls he kept saying, "Just look into the cellars of other people. You might find other families and girls down there." Sorry. In April 2019, it was reported that Fritzl's health was declining and that he didn't want to live anymore. In September 2021, a decision was made to release Fritzl from a psychiatric detention facility to a regular prison, where he was to continue to serve his life sentence. That decision was based on a psychiatric report which said he no longer posed any danger. The ruling was appealed and overturned in November 2001, and the Regional Court of Krems was ordered to reconsider the case. In late April 2022, a panel of three judges decided that Joseph Fritzl could be moved. The decision was based on a supplementary psychiatric report submitted in March. However, the court ruled that he would remain in the psychiatric facility until an appeal to the higher regional court in Vienna was heard. The move to the regular prison would mean that Fritzl, who received a life sentence, was eligible for parole in 2023, having served the initial 15 years of his sentence. In January 2024, Fritzl applied to Krems Regional Court for release from prison into a nursing home, but the application was rejected. Yeah. Yay! On January 25th of 2024, the higher regional court approved Fritzl's move to the regular prison amid reports that he was suffering from dementia. Within a week, prosecutors had filed a complaint seeking to overturn the decision in a higher court. If Fritzl is moved to a regular prison, he will be eligible for parole again in 2025.
All right, so let's hope that doesn't happen, but you never know. But yeah, so that's Fritzl, man. And
that was Fritzl.
So three murders, possibly, that he was never convicted of. I don't know if they've ever went back with DNA and tried to see if there was any DNA evidence that would link him to that, or they just dismissed him as a suspect altogether and just moved on. Yeah.
Right. But, yeah. They have him in prison and probably like, what's the point? Yeah. Of course, you know, we would want that tested to get that closure for those families, but
right.
But Austria is not pushing it.
But from a law standpoint, you know, the bad guy's in jail, you know.
Yeah.
There's nothing else you can really do but put him in jail. Yeah. So, but, Cindy says she was reading an article that he thinks he is a pop star. He's definitely a He's definitely a well-known guy in pop culture, especially in that area of the world. But, yes. That don't surprise me that he would think something like that, being his...
Right?
You know,
yeah.
Because, I mean, if you ask him, he didn't do anything wrong. It was a consensual
right. he,
relationship
he, yeah.
the whole way.
He says it was consensual.
He took care of the kids. He was, he was quote-unquote loving to the kids. He, like they said, he brought Christmas trees down there at the holidays, brought them toys, let them watch movies, sat there and watched movies. Well, this is really sick in a minute if you think about it. Like, he sat there and watched movies with these kids. And
yeah, while they're in captivity.
And
yeah.
And turn around and made them the next day dig dirt with their hands so that he could expand
with their hands.
So he could expand their living quarters. And
Yeah,
it's just...
And I can't imagine, I mean, you know, I know she was 18 when she went in the basement, and how ironic it was that her kids were 19 and 18 when they came out of that basement.
Right.
And how much of their lives they've just lost. I mean, I know she did her best with what she had. She, you know, taught them, and I'm sure she played games with them and loved them and all of that. But oh my gosh, I can't imagine how much of just normal childhood things, yeah. going to the park, swinging on a swing,
Cindy,
you know.
Said he is currently writing a book with his lawyer on how well of a father he is.
Oh, good Lord.
That's insane. That's insane. But, yeah, she never got to take him anywhere outside of the house. Like they said that when the daughter got sick and they had to take her to jail, that was the first time she had seen daylight. In 24 years.
And she had to be on her deathbed to get out of that basement.
Right. Which, they said that he had wrote some letters that he had planned on mailing saying that she was coming home. So I think maybe he was getting to the age where he couldn't do it anymore. So he was going to release him, is what I look at it as. That he was like, I can't crawl through this door anymore. You know what I mean? I got to do something, come up
right.
with a plan. So.
Yeah, because he was, 72 when he got arrested?
Right, so, yeah.
You know? Gosh, oof.
So it's just, yeah, it's a wild case and a very interesting case. And I'd like to thank Cindy for recommending that case to us, because I had no idea about this guy, to be honest.
Right. And just to let you all know, Rose Marie, the mother, she did divorce Fritzl in 2012.
Yeah. 3 years after finding out all this stuff and being convicted. And, you know,
yes. And honestly, it was probably part of her therapy. But yeah.
Yeah. Honestly, if she really didn't know about any of this and it all come to light, she probably in her own mind kind of still disbelieved it. You know, still had a break in reality there that this really couldn't have happened to a guy I've been married to for this long and had a whole life with.
Right.
Because, you know, from her point of view, they ran a campground together. They had all these businesses together. They had kids together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they raised their grandkids. And, you know, from her point of view, her daughter had just joined a cult and gave up on her kids. And she was being the loving grandparent, taking care of the grandkids and being responsible. And it's maddening to think about from her point of view. You know, if she truly didn't know any of this shit was going on, and she may not have known this was going on because she didn't want to know this was going on.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
She didn't want
to. And then to find out that your husband, your life partner, did all of this with your daughter that you had with him. I can't fathom how to process all of that. It's just crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. And everybody, I mean, it's harsh for the kids, right? It's really harsh for Elizabeth and her kids, and like just them having to reconnect with their siblings that grew up upstairs, you know, and knowing that all that was a lie this whole time. You know,
it's that whole why you, not me.
Right. Yeah. Why
situation?
Did they,
you know. Yeah.
Especially with Kirsten and what was the oldest son's name? He was
Stefan.
Stefan. They were born before Lisa was, and they didn't ever get taken upstairs. You know, Lisa was taken upstairs, and then Monica, and then
Alexander, the twin, one of the twins. Yeah,
yeah, and the twin.
Yep.
And then after that, you know, it was like, oh well, we can't have you taking care of any more kids, so that kid's got to stay downstairs too. And it's just, you know, Felix got stuck downstairs, and you know, that's just crazy the way he, you know, he left the two oldest. Well, maybe he left the two oldest because by the time Lisa was born, they were
too old and couldn't have said no.
Yeah, they knew
this man's been keeping me in the basement. Yeah,
right. So
let's see. They were born. Lisa was born in 1992. Kirsten was born in 1998. So she would have been,
yeah, so
or 88. Yeah. So 88, 89, 90, 91, 92. Yeah. She was 4 years old.
Yeah. And the boy, Stefan, was 3 years old at that point. So yeah.
Right. They would have been able to say, yeah, something.
Yeah. Cause Aspen, my 3 year old, she definitely tells you everything that's going on. So, you know, but, I don't know how normal of a life they'll ever have. But the fact that they have moved on relatively to what they can have as normal, where she's out shopping and being part of society, they're going to summer camps and spending time with other kids. That's a miracle in itself. That is, that they're able even to have those kind of interactions with people, but.
Yeah.
Crazy.
And I think I remember hearing, or in that story that I actually watched, Kirsten, well, actually everybody that was stuck in the basement had scurvy from the lack of, you know, vitamins and minerals that are, you know, they were like emaciated, had absolutely no color, no pallor. Their hair was falling out, their teeth were horribly rotten and falling out. I just can't imagine, honestly.
It's
just so sad. So sad. Oof.
And what, her and Stefan, they'd be in their 30s now, right? So, like today, present day from 2008. If they're
88. Yeah, they'd be. Yeah, oof. That was when I graduated high school. Yeah, so 34 years.
Yeah, so that's crazy. Yep. That's crazy.
Yeah.
And you know they're still not, you know, normal, quote unquote. You know?
Normal, right.
I don't know.
As normal as their normal will ever be.
I don't know if she ever got married or Stefan ever got married or whatever happened to them after that, but.
I didn't find anything on that.
I'm hoping they have some kind of a normal life.
Yeah. And, you know, in all of the stories and all the research, I did not find any evidence where Joseph did anything sexual to any of his grandchildren, the Elizabeth's children. So, you know, there's that.
I don't know if he ever did anything with Kirsten or not, because I mean the behavior she exhibited with ripping out her hair, shredding her dresses up, stopping up toilets.
But he raped her mother in front of her.
Right, that indicates a huge amount of trauma. You know, so yeah, I don't know. Sick individual all the way around.
You absolutely. Know,
the fact that he still thinks that nothing was ever done wrong, and that he,
nothing wrong with it. You'll find that anywhere. Just look in other people's basements.
Right. Yeah. He's just,
just insane.
In his mind, he's the victim. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes. So exactly.
That's insane.
Totally narcissistic. Mm-hmm.
But, so that is the case of Joseph Fritzl and his kids. Crazy case. Next week I want to do something a little weird. I want to see if it's not a crime necessarily, but I want to go over the January 6th riots that happened at the Capitol and everything that has come out about it And we can determine whether or not it was a crime or whether it was whatever you want to call it. I think that's interesting and everything that's going on with the elections coming up in November and everything with people being charged and then not charged and being released after being charged. It's a whole thing that goes on with that whole thing there. And
yeah, I think that'll be wonderful. That'll be a really good topic that'll probably – we'll have a lot of information on, so that'll be a good one. That'll be interesting for sure.
Yeah, and it gets us away from the murder and this dark story. You know, I don't want to week after week just get dark and dark and dark. You know, it's depressing.
But, yeah, absolutely. it'll be I think it'll. I mean, it's relevant to, like you said, the times right now, and we can do our forensic investigations into the Capitol riots and the aftermath for sure.
Yeah. So I think that'd be interesting. And then we can get comments from people. I think it will. You know, and let people give their opinions and stuff maybe after.
Definitely.
Through all the evidence that's out there.
Evidence, yeah.
Fine. So great episode.
I think it will be very fun.
Thanks for being patient with me. And I know last week kind of fizzled out because I had things going on with the wife and everything, but
and was it last week was Monk's
last
big
week
day
was,
huh yeah so that's awesome.
That's what I was doing last week.
Monk's birthday.
I just automatically blame my wife for everything that you know, so I was wrong.
Poor Sarah.
It was definitely Caleb. I was waiting on him to get home and I hadn't heard nothing from him. Birthday
you hadn't got to do the birthday song and stuff. I just went to bed early though. I just this story was a good holdover, but I'm with you. Let's do something lighter. Less dark, but great idea, Russ.
I'll let you tell people real quick about what's coming up Wednesday with a 6-2 patio. I know Tuesday we got tools, that's what it is. It's not trucks.
Yes,
they just always talk about
talk about trucks a lot, but
toys, so tools, and that things one is coming up Tuesday, and that's at 9 p.m Eastern, 8 p.m Central, and mm-hmm. that's over there with Brett and Scott and Shane from 6-2 Patio. Mm-hmm. Co-host that one. And then on Wednesday you got I'll let you tell us about 6-2 Patio.
Okay, well, I appreciate that. So on Wednesday at 8 p.m. Central, it's our new permanent time, 8 p.m. Central, we talk about different topics. And this coming week, we're going to be talking about divorce and children and how to, you know, positives and negatives about staying together, separating, how to support the children and all of it throughout the whole thing. So. That'll be good.
That'd be really good. And, a lot of people go through that. So,
absolutely. Yeah. The statistics were staggering when I started doing the research. So,
yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy how many people.
So, yeah. So, that'd be good if you guys could join us.
And then,
of course, you know, you do in manipulation of the mind on Thursdays still?
No, I'm doing those on Mondays. I haven't done them recently.
Oh, Mondays. Okay.
I am going to get back into doing those. But
great, because that's a neat one.
Sunday we do have the trivia show.
Absolutely. Caps,
the Illuminated Brilliance at Caps with Caps and Sue. Yep. And winners of those
fun show,
the winners of the trivia contest each Sunday at the end of the month we'll get together, have a run a trivia off, I guess you call it. And where they can compete, and the winner of that trivia contest will get merchandise from the Illuminated Brilliance at Caps and sent to them.
Awesome.
A winning good gift deal. So be there for the show so you can get in there and you can win and you can be eligible for the end of the month contest there where we mm-hmm. award out trivia prizes.
At what time is that one now? Sunday?
That's at 4 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m.
awesome
GMT time over there across the seas. And be on the lookout for coming at the beginning of next month, the old man's going to one day a week. And that first week of May, he'll be on vacation. So we'll have what Eric has deemed a soft opening on Monday, that first Monday of May. And we'll start, me and Caps, we got a show coming out called The Middle. It's going to be a news variety kind of show. And it's going to be really good, really, really interesting.
That's going to be awesome. I'm excited about that one for you.
Make sure you check out Sue's early morning shows. Make sure you check out Caps' afternoon shows. My buddy down there in chat, South Oz, he's always running shows. Strange Days with South Oz. Anytime you see those on, check them out because they are awesome. He has had a show here recently with Marie, a music trivia show that he published. So as his brother Snake that just recently passed away, his son is a part of that episode. Go listen to it. It's a great episode. And awesome. There's really good things going on over there with Strange Days. And make sure you check out my friend Brett over there at the Pulse on Wednesdays. Like I said, he's got a variety show that comes on, and it will be directly after 6-2 Patio now at their new starting time. Mm-hmm. And check him out Tuesdays with toys, tools, and things. And a lot of good things going on out there. Make sure you check out the old man. He's still going Monday through Friday for the rest of this month. And a lot of good things going over there. I got a lunchtime show you can check out. And I got a morning show that also runs. And then, of course, outside of normal overnight after midnight that we do here every night, Monday through Sunday. And I appreciate everybody for hanging out. And
a lot of good stuff.
Joining with us and being part of the Podbean family. Get out there, share it on your Facebook, share it at your media, get people in here, get them listening. They'll have a great time, too. And
absolutely.
Right now, going to end this show. Let that flip over, and then we'll be right back with Outside of Normal after midnight. Thank you, Lucky, for staying up with us. And I know you're usually in bed, and but you know, tomorrow's the weekend.
I'm doing good on these Friday nights.
Yeah, enjoy the weekend.
I appreciate you having me. It's a blast.
Look forward to next week, and until then, my friends.
Yeah.
Hit the entrance music. And y'all have a great night, and I'll see everybody on the other side. And if I don't, have a beautiful weekend, because you are beautiful people and you deserve it. So we'll see everybody soon.
Oh, awesome. Yep. Thanks for coming. See you next week.